mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, another side effect of rising interest rates. The number of loan approvals have been cut in half since the Fed's first rate hike 2 years ago. What will be the longer-term impact, and will that trend reverse itself as rates come back down? Also this morning, to your health, how advancements in genetic testing are providing answers to medical challenges and offering early warning signs for families at risk. And happening around town, it's a dream event for Java junkies. The Northwest Ohio Coffee Trail is back, this year to benefit the local chapters of NAMI. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. The only explanation is that it is the beginning of the end of civilization as we know it. Oscar Mayer is coming out with plant-based hot dogs and sausages. Oscar Mayer, plant-based hot dogs. The company announced their not dogs will hit the shelves later this year. It is a joint venture between parent company Kraft Heinz and the Knot Company, which is a food tech company backed by Jeff Bezos. I didn't even know he was into this, but if it's trendy and, you know, very progressive, it would have to be Jeff Bezos. The company told NBC News the plant-based options are made of bamboo fiber, mushroom, pea protein, and acerola cherry. That's what it says. So make of that what you will. But I suppose exactly. At least they can name the ingredients. Can you really name all of the ingredients in traditional hot dogs? Or do you want to? I'm not sure I want to know what's in the not dogs, but anyway, later this year, the not dogs from Oscar Mayer going to hit store shelves. It is the end of civilization as we know it. So getting up, heading to work this morning. This I found rather interesting on the Newswire. New analysis of data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics to see how many people in different professions spend their days. Those in business and finance tend to start later in the day and end early. Their workday starts later and ends earlier for business and finance professions. Those in technology, coders, people who write the programs that we run on our computers, coders tend to have a morning burst of energy, an afternoon lull, and then another burst later in the day. Laborers, like construction workers, start and finish early, while truck drivers work fairly evenly throughout the day. And food service workers experience a boom around dinner time and tend to work the latest. It's food service. You would expect a boom around dinner time, but they tend to work the latest, which, again, bars and restaurants open late and all of that. Not a big surprise, but I thought that was kind of interesting way analysis of the way different those in different professions spend their days. But whatever your profession is, there hasn't been a commuter in modern history who wouldn't at one time or another wished that they could just fly their way out of traffic, even in smaller cities. I mean, we are fortunate that we generally don't have big traffic jams like they have in the big cities. But still, you know, morning traffic, nobody likes morning traffic. I don't care how big of a city you live in, morning traffic can be a hassle. But if a startup in Silicon Valley has its way, the dream of flying your way over the traffic will actually someday soon become a reality. Alef, is that how you pronounce it? Alef Aeronautics, A-L-E-F, Alef or Alef Aeronautics, reports that 2,850 people have already pre-ordered the company's Model A flying vehicle. Now, it is said to cost $300,000. The company is actually backed by SpaceX. And unlike Henry Ford's Model A, this Model A can take off in the air vertically and fly forward above the obstacles until a desired destination is reached. That's according to the company's website. And again, evident 2,850 people have pre-ordered this. Evidently, it is not just a pipe dream. In June of last year, they became the first traditional electric car to receive a limited special airworthiness certificate from the FAA, which cleared the way for testing. CEO Jim Duchovny says of the pre-orders, "We're excited to see such strong initial demand for the Aleph flying car." And again, I don't know how you say it, how you pronounce it. Aleph? Aleph? Anyway. "We are thankful for the notes of gratitude and inspiration we received with some of the pre-orders. We still have a road to go before starting deliveries, but when we're going, or it says, but where we're going, we don't need roads." You remember that line from Back to the Future? "Where we're going, we don't need roads." And, by the way, if 300 grand is a little beyond your means, the company tells CNBC they have plans for a four-person sedan that they hope will retail around 35 grand. It's $35,000. Now, that's a little more affordable. That's basically the price of a new car that doesn't fly these days. But that, they say, won't be available until at least 2035. But it does give us something to dream about. I know, flying cars, they were supposed to be here by now, but maybe by the year 2035. Only about 35 years too late. More news on Caitlin Clark. The Big Ten tournament, women's basketball tournament, got underway last night, continues through the weekend. The Buckeyes will open their tournament. The Lady Buckeyes have their first game tomorrow. And I think Iowa, which is seeded number 2, also plays on Friday, and that's their first game. But more Caitlin Clark news. The Iowa women's basketball sensation has signed an exclusive multi-year deal with a major trading card company. Panini America made the announcement yesterday, saying that she is the first multi-year exclusive athlete to sign with the company. It is the first deal of its kind for a female athlete. Her first trading card will honor the moment that she passed Kelsey Plum, to become the all-time leading scorer in NCAA women's basketball history. And of course, since then, she's gone on to break several other records as well. The amount of the Caitlin Clark trading card deal has not been disclosed. As to how much money she's making, we don't know. But the first deal of its kind for a women's sports athlete, and Caitlin Clark continues to make history. And how about this? Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Something to think about here. Amazing science, but this also, I think, falls under the category of things that we have to worry about. Every day, it seems like there is a new story that we have to worry about. We have to, wring our hands over and worry if this is going to be the end of the world and all of that. And apologies to the Oscar Mayer not dogs. This, I think, is that story for today. A company that wants to bring back the woolly mammoth, which went extinct millennia ago. Company that wants to bring back the woolly mammoth says that it has made a major breakthrough in that effort. Texas-based Colossal Biosciences announced, first of all, just the name of the company is disturbing. Colossal Biosciences. Nothing good can come from a company named Colossal Biosciences. I mean, think about it. That just sounds like a disaster waiting to happen. But Texas-based Colossal Biosciences announced yesterday that they have created a set of stem cells from an Asian elephant, hoping to manipulate it into bringing back the giant woolly mammoth, bringing back to life the woolly mammoth. Now, while this project is in the early stages, it is noted that the creature, whatever it is, when they do eventually make this happen, will not actually be the same as the old woolly mammoth, which went extinct about 4,000 years ago. It would just be similar to the woolly mammoth. But there are all kinds of problems, I think, with it. I mean, if this isn't raising some red flags for you, what would it take to raise red flags for you? You know, if this doesn't disturb you, then I don't know what to say. I'm thinking of all of the different ways that this could go very, very badly. Did nobody at Colossal Biosciences watch Jurassic Park? Did nobody? What? I don't know, but that's what they're going to do. Bring back the woolly mammoth or something close to it. Run for your lives. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly cloudy today, a high around 50. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 40. The Ohio Department of Transportation says construction on the new diverging diamond interchange at County Road 99 and Interstate 75 on the north end of Findlay will begin early this spring and conclude in 2026. ODOT says the project ensures the expected economic growth in that area of the county will be supported by the infrastructure, and ODOT officials are grateful to the city and county for seeing the need for a modern interchange design at that location. Get more on what the new County Road 99 Interstate 75 interchange will look like when it's finished in the story on our website. CVS is facing a $1.5 million fine due to violations at some of its Ohio stores.
The Ohio Board of Pharmacy claims violations were found at 22 store locations. Violations include understaffed stores, missing pills, and a customer sent to the emergency room after taking the wrong medication. In a statement, CVS says it is pleased to have reached an agreement with the Ohio Board of Pharmacy.
WTOL 11's Amanda Fay reporting. Millstream Career Center has been awarded a grant from the state, which will allow them to expand opportunities and community partnerships. Among other things, the funds will be used to enhance the health professions classrooms with interactive mannequins used for simulations in partnership with Blanchard Valley Hospital. Currently, Millstream serves students from 15 school districts in Hancock, Putnam, and Wyandotte counties. The Hancock Historical Museum has a fun new exhibit that will make you feel very nostalgic for a certain decade.
We are putting up a large new exhibit in our community room on the 90s. We're calling it Growing Up 90s Hancock County Edition. So it's focusing on being a kid or a teenager in Hancock County in the 90s.
Museum curator and archivist Joy Bennett was on with WFIN's Chris Oakes to discuss their new 90s exhibit, which you can see at the museum at 422 West Sandusky Street in Findlay. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com. Matt Demchek for 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
Well, something really interesting has happened since the Fed began raising interest rates 2 years ago. We know that the cost of credit has gone up. It's getting more expensive to service debt, more costly to put things on your credit card, but it has also made credit harder to get. Denials for all types of financial products have surged, further squeezing the finances of many Americans. Bankrate analyst Sarah Foster joins us this morning. And Sarah, this side effect of tighter lending decisions that you found in your most recent survey, could we call that an unintended consequence, or is that what typically happens when interest rates go up?
Yeah, side effect is a good way of putting it. I think it is to be expected that Americans with especially lower credit scores might find it even tougher to qualify for the financing that maybe they would have been able to pursue before the Fed started raising interest rates compared to today, now in this high rate environment. But I think from the personal finance perspective, where this gets tricky and maybe where this was a little bit more surprising to me, was just the steps that Americans who were denied, what they took to be able to access the credit that they needed.
Yeah.
And really, it seems like even though they were denied the loans, many Americans still found a way to access credit, but it could potentially be a more painful way.
Yeah, I want to get into more of that here in just a moment, but kind of set the stage with some of this data here. On the one hand, my immediate thought is, why should this matter to the lender? They're just going to adjust their rates according to the risk. So the risk to the lender is not going to go up per se. So is it more of a case of the interest rate goes up, that means the payment goes up, and now you've put more people into a place where they can't afford the potential payments? Is that what it is?
That's a great way of looking at it. I think a main reason why it suddenly becomes harder to qualify for loans when the Fed is raising interest rates is just how much more expensive those financing costs become. Mm. And I think what happened in the housing market is really the best example. We at Bankrate, we track rate data looking at 30-year fixed rate mortgage, you know, what it was going back all the way to the 80s. And so we do see here that, you know, compared to when rates were at a record low in 2021, the cost of financing a $500,000 home would cost a borrower about $2,100. But today, with how much higher interest rates are, that same home would now cost a borrower close to $3,400. Mm. So in a sense, it's a 62% increase now, that monthly payment, just because of interest rates.
Yeah.
And when that's more expensive, you suddenly need more income to qualify for the same good.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, we said this is all types of credit products. So we're talking about everything from credit cards to mortgages here. And you find that two groups actually appear to be hardest hit by this trend: younger generations and parents with minor children.
It was interesting to me. I was trying to kind of trace back maybe, you know, why this could be happening. We saw that 6 and 10 Gen Z and millennials were denied versus half of Gen X and then a third of baby boomers. You know, it could be because they don't have as far back of a credit history going. You know, they're young, they're getting their lives started. They might not have really hit their peak earnings years yet. They even might have crushing student loan debt that's altering the debt to income ratio that we know a lot of lenders also evaluate when they're deciding whether to approve someone for loans. But those parents with children, that was another interesting group to me. We saw that about 6 in 10 parents with children younger than 18 were denied a loan, which was versus, you know, less than two-fifths of adults with children who were older than 18.
Hmm.
And more than those adults who didn't have children. I think that's interesting because we also saw that those groups were more likely to apply for financing. They could be having to seek out credit because, as we know, families have been hit especially hard from this era of high inflation.
Yeah.
And that could be potentially harming them, too.
Yeah. Good observation there. And to say that this puts greater strain on individuals and families' financial situation, that would be understandable and even obvious. But that brings us to what you were talking about earlier, the effect of this, both in the immediate and potentially in the long term.
Yeah. And so we found that a credit denial comes with pretty significant financial strain for those rejected applicants. 82% of them said that they took a negative hit, for their wallets did at least, when they were denied. And a third of them felt more stressed about their finances. And pretty close to 1 in 4 even said that they pursued alternative financing. And, you know, when we say that, we're talking about cash advances, buy now, pay later, and payday loans too, which can sometimes come with interest rates as high as 650%. So significantly higher than some of those other interest rates that we see from, you know, the more traditional forms of borrowing. And that kind of makes the cycle of getting out of debt even more difficult, which could make it harder to qualify for those loans with better interest rates. And then in a sense, you know, the cycle of debt just keeps on spiraling and it becomes even harder to break. And I think for that reason, that's why this really matters right now, is especially looking at how many Americans have had to turn to their credit cards to help them, you know, absorb the impact of higher prices. You know, my biggest fear is this is just, you know, a tidal wave that just keeps on rolling.
Yeah, because that was actually the other question that I had. Now that the general consensus is that in 2024, we are going to see rates start to come down, will this trend of more credit denials reverse itself, first of all?
It's a great question. I think that the Fed would be maybe the first to tell you that they're planning to cut interest rates later rather than sooner. And when they do start cutting interest rates, it doesn't mean that era, you know, we saw with mortgage rates being below 3%.
Right.
That's not returning anytime soon. I think with the Fed, kind of from their point of view, what could actually really end up helping borrowers getting better access to credit is if the Fed can continue to hopefully make sure that this higher rate era doesn't cause the economy to enter a recession. I was really just considering how much interest rates have surged and how quickly. I was a little shocked to see that that the number wasn't higher, the number of rejections wasn't higher, and that the share of Americans who say that their access to credit isn't higher. And I think a big part of that is because the economy has avoided a recession. Unemployment has been holding below 4% for the longest stretch of time since the 60s. You know, as long as Americans have these stable, consistent paychecks, I think that helps make lenders, you know, less afraid about loaning money out because they think they'll still be able to get paid back. But if the tide does eventually turn, that could ultimately, of course, reverse that from happening.
It's interesting you bring up that the R word is still in play here. And not only will we see the trend of more credit denials reverse itself, how long will that take? And how long will it take for those who have been impacted by this trend to get back to a place where they feel more financially secure and could potentially take advantage of these more favorable interest rates? Again, looking at the long-term effects on the finances that these folks are experiencing, as you were alluding to.
Yeah, and it's a great question because a lot of the research that I've done too hasn't just looked at where inflation is concentrated, but those financial steps that Americans who've been trying to make room for inflation in their budget, you know, what they're doing. And a lot of these steps can come with consequences that can continue to linger for decades. I mean, I'm thinking specifically about those Americans who've maybe stopped contributing as much to their retirement accounts because everything around them is expensive.
Yeah.
Those, of course, who've taken on credit card debt. Because of how debt compounds, because of how interest compounds, you know, time in the market is more important than timing the market itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be worried that could come with consequences, you know, decades down the line where you might still be kind of seeing the impact of inflation.
Yeah. So just something to keep in mind that even as we hear about interest rates easing and rates coming back down, potentially that may not be the full story. That is not the full story. There's a lot more nuance to all of this. Again, bank rate analyst Sarah Foster with us this morning. Sarah, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was great to be here.
You remember yesterday we were talking with Dr. Bill Coase on the program about Blanchard Valley Health System's recent announcement that they will no longer perform open heart surgeries and framing that as an enhancement to cardiac care. And he explained that with recent technological advancements in cardiovascular health, in many cases, open heart surgery just isn't needed anymore, thanks to better procedures that have been developed. So it only makes sense to focus their resources on being the best at those procedures rather than on increasingly rare open heart procedures. It really makes sense when you think about it, and it highlights the way advancements in technology are leading to better care for patients. And here is another example to your health this morning: genetic testing. It can be a great resource to provide essential health information that could improve medical outcomes, as well as unlocking preventative steps for your family when they get genetic testing as well. Obviously, the earlier you know what you're dealing with, the sooner you can take control of your healthcare journey. And perhaps no one knows that better than Michael Black. Not only is he vice chair of the board at Tess Research Foundation, he is also the father of a two-year-old whose frequent seizures were confounding doctors until genetic testing provided the answer. Michael, tell us more about your son Rowan's medical journey here.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, Rowan was born June of 2021. And, you know, just from every conceivable indication, it was just about a textbook delivery. Start was a dream come true, and we just recovered in the hospital as they did a little bit of additional monitoring on Rowan. After 18 hours, they did a little bit of investigation into a couple of concerning things that doctors were noticing that just they weren't clearing up, and that's when our world really changed. As it turns out, Rowan was basically having, as you said, like nonstop, back-to-back seizures. These are two-four-minute long seizures, and just a two-minute break in between them before he's back on the next one. And they weren't responding to medication. So, you know, new dad, first-time dad, it was a nightmare. It was terrible, Chris.
Obviously it's got to be frustrating because the doctors initially were confounded as to what exactly was going on. So how frustrating was that?
Yeah, it was. You know, they were doing their best, and it wasn't frustration with them, but it's really frustration with the situation. Things first, it's trying to get a lid on stopping the seizures, right? So how can we stop it? And thankfully, they were able to do that within a couple of days. After that, though, it's looking at this whole slate of options. Is it something bacterial? Is it something viral? Is it metabolic? Is it a vitamin deficiency? And you're just crossing off all these different options that it could be. Eventually, we looked at genetics, and you know, we got a genetic test from Invitae, and that even within 2 weeks, we were able to quickly pick out or at least suggest that it might be this rare genetic disorder called SLC13A5 citrate transporter disorder.
Wow, that's a mouthful. And even so, I thought what was interesting about the story is even so, this is what the indication was. The only way to really know for sure is for the both of you to get tested as well, right?
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, my wife, Amber, and I, we underwent genetic testing as well through Invitae, and we got a definitive diagnosis for Rowan on SLC13A5 disorder, as I said. And that test, that diagnosis, it completely changed our life for the better. We connected with an organization out of California called the Tess Research Foundation that's dedicated to helping children and families affected by SLC13A5 disorder. And, you know, Rowan's medical team this whole time, as I said, they've been amazing, but they would be the first to tell you that something as new, something as rare as this disorder, the real experts, Chris, are going to be the parents and the caregivers. So they've really welcomed the advice that we're bringing from the test community. That's everything from anti-seizure medications that Rowan's taking right now or that we've added, medications we've taken away that he no longer takes, the type of physiotherapy that he does, all of that's informed by other families that are affected by this disorder. So it was really, you know, night and day between being lost without a diagnosis and then having this testing and figuring out the diagnosis. And, you know, Rowan hasn't had an easy go of it. His disorder is lifelong. He'll continue to face delays and challenges, but I can tell you he is just about the happiest 2.5-year-old you can imagine.
So obviously, genetic testing has impacted your family, as you were saying, with respect to your son's health and his future, but also it has impacted you because, as we mentioned, you are vice chair of the board now at Test Research Foundation. Talk a little bit about the type of work that the foundation is doing.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the Research Foundation was founded to improve the lives of those affected by the disorder, both the individuals and the families. So besides that really key support and community element I mentioned, it's also just about increasing awareness for the rare disorder and then funding really cutting-edge research to better understand the disorder, better treat the disorder, and, you know, knock wood, Chris, but better hopefully cure the disorder long-term. It's really about kind of establishing a research network to highlight the connections there. So I'm extremely, extremely proud to be on the board of the foundation now.
And what advice would you have based on your own personal experience and the experience of others that, again, you have come into contact with for those who are faced with this option or the possibility, those who are considering genetic testing?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would just say, you know, like any of these things, ask your doctor, talk with your medical team, see if genetic testing might help inform the health decisions you or your family make. I'm not a doctor. I can't recommend it, but I could say for us, genetic testing, that was really the key thing that opened the door to better managing and better understanding Rowan's health. So it's important to understand whether it's a rare disease or otherwise, you know, having this genetic information, a comprehensive panel, really helps you, empowers you to know about your personal health information, either for yourself or the family. So,
as we always say when we are talking about health and medical information, the best source of information for your specific situation is obviously going to be your doctor, your personal physician. That being said, Michael, where do folks go to get more kind of general information to kind of start informing themselves on this?
Yeah, well, Christine, hit the nail on the head. That's go to the doctor. But number two, you can just kind of start looking around a little bit at Invitae.com. That's Invitae.com. And they've got all sorts of information about the different types of genetic tests and how they might be able to help you and give you a bit more information that could empower you.
Again, Michael Black is vice chair of the board at the Tess Research Foundation. We will put the link up on our webpage for more information, as we mentioned. Michael, thanks very much for taking the time, and certainly best of luck for continued success for both you and your family.
Thank you so much, Chris. Thanks for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Miami-Dade police officer has been accused of being drunk when he crashed his county vehicle into a police car. Again, I will note, is a Miami-Dade officer who crashed his county vehicle into a police car. Victor Montalvo allegedly crashed into a parked cop car with its emergency lights on around midday on Tuesday. It's not like he didn't see it there. It was, had lights flashing and everything. The arresting officer said Officer Montalvo told him that he had been drinking a little too much. However, he refused to take a field sobriety test. He has been charged with DUI and causing property damage. File that under the category of really should have known better. All right. Elsewhere, that's just a warm-up for the stories that we have out of the Sunshine State today. But first, another rather odd traffic story here. A beaver blocking traffic in Washington State has been taken into custody, but a second suspect is still on the loose. Police in Bellingham, Washington, responded to a report of two beavers blocking Aldrich Road a few days ago. Both animals fled the scene, but the larger one reappeared the next day to continue causing traffic issues. The beaver was taken into protective custody and is being examined by the Fish and Wildlife Office. Police have high hopes for the suspect. Hopefully, the department writes on their Instagram page, hopefully it will get the help it needs and give up living dangerously on the streets of Bellingham. Can you imagine trying to explain that to the boss why you got there late? That's why there were a pair of beavers blocking traffic in the... I guess if you live in the Pacific Northwest, they do have large beaver populations. But it's Oregon that's actually the beaver state, right? It's not Washington, so maybe they were just there on vacation. I don't know. This from the international file, the broken news from the What Were They Thinking file. You know, most people don't look forward to getting their flu shot or their COVID shot, or, then most people don't look forward to just getting shots in general. But one German man voluntarily received the COVID vaccine 217 times over a 29-month span. 217 times. Now, it is pointed out in the story that this individual received this many vaccines against the recommendations of doctors, but did so for private reasons, he said. And then he allowed scientists to examine his blood samples. And while the assumption was that this many vaccines could actually send the man's body into overdrive, he appears to have had no negative side effects from this. No negative side effects. The patient also showed no signs of having contracted COVID, so apparently it worked. However, scientists still do not endorse hypervaccination as a strategy to enhance adaptive immunity. Why would you do that? 217 vaccines in 29 months. That just... I apparently no ill side effects, but it still seems dangerous to me. I don't think I would do that. It's crazy. What would possess somebody to do that? Back to Florida now, where a man is facing charges after apparently losing his cool in a Culver's drive-thru in St. Petersburg. Now, I think we have all, if not done this, at least we've had this thought. Police this week arrested 37-year-old Sean Drake for allegedly attacking a man in the Culver's drive-thru. Officers said he became frustrated with the victim's vehicle in front of him, so he rammed it several times with his own car. And again, I think we've all dreams about doing that, right? We've been behind somebody that is ticking us off for some reason, and we just ram them with our car. Well, this guy actually did it several times. When the other driver confronted Mr. Drake, he allegedly struck the man and then drove off with the other guy on his hood before the victim eventually fell off, suffering minor injuries. It must have been quite a scene. He drives off with the guy holding on to the hood of his car. This is like a bad TV cop show. Only minor injuries. Police say during questioning, Mr. Drake appeared to be inebriated, but he was definitely belligerent and had to be tased at one point. He is charged with aggravated battery, DUI, and resisting arrest. What the story does not say is whether he ever got his order at the Culver's drive-thru. And I would suspect not. And finally, in the broken news this morning, is a rather unusual lawsuit. But maybe this makes sense to you. I don't know. You decide whether this is a frivolous lawsuit or not. A Florida woman is suing the Coca-Cola company because its Topo Chico Margarita Hard Seltzers, apparently do not contain any tequila. And what is a margarita without tequila? That's Tamara Fletcher's argument. She claims that the company deceived customers by including agave plants in the design on the hard seltzer can and by calling the drink a margarita. According to court documents, she says consumers associate a margarita with tequila and thus expect the agave liquor to be part of any drink described as such. It's a clever lawsuit, you got to admit. I mean, nothing else. She does have a point, I suppose. But a judge has ruled now that a consumer looking at the product's label would understand that it is, in fact, a hard seltzer because it says hard seltzer on the can. And thus, just because it's flavored like a margarita, most consumers, they say, would not believe that it is an actual margarita. I don't know. You decide. Deceptive advertising? Or just somebody looking for a quick payday? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When the rumors are flying, getting the facts matters more than ever. At WFIN, we're your trusted source and will always present the story only after verifying the information with trusted sources. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust in us to present just the facts when covering events impacting Findlay and Hancock County. You can depend on us to get the story right every time on social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. It is spring break season, and if you are traveling for spring break, or really any time during the spring season, you want to be aware of the airports you'll want to avoid if you can. An analysis of flight information from last spring season, I'm talking March, the months of March and April specifically, finds that nearly 40% of flights in and out of Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport were either canceled or delayed. Nearly 40% canceled or delayed during the spring season at Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International. That's a pretty big chunk. That's number one on the list. Las Vegas came in second place with nearly 33% of flights impacted, and Orlando International Airport came in third with 32.6% of flights either delayed or canceled. Now, this is perhaps not shocking, as those places are certainly very popular spring break destinations. Miami was number six on the list, and Dallas-Fort Worth was eighth. The rest of the top 10 for most delayed or canceled flights during this season would be considered connecting airports to those spring break destinations. Those would be Baltimore, Washington, BWI, Chicago Midway, Newark Liberty Airport, Denver International, and JFK in New York. So the advice, if you are headed to those destinations or through those airports, would be to give yourself extra time, pack your patience, and prepare for last-minute changes. And if you are traveling internationally, the United States has issued travel advisories from Mexico, Jamaica, and the Bahamas, again, very popular spring break destinations. The U.S. Embassy and consulates in Mexico specifically issued a spring break travel alert saying crime, including violent crime, can occur anywhere, including in popular tourist destinations. Jamaica has been given the State Department's Level 3 Reconsider Travel Advisory. U.S. Embassy in the Bahamas also warns against violent crime and notes that watercraft activities are not consistently regulated. These multiple advisories suggest drinking responsibly, always a very good idea. Sticking with friends, if you're going to be at any of these places, avoid night travel, and keep family and friends aware of your plans. Smart travel advice, especially for the spring season. I thought that was really interesting, those airports with the most flight delays and cancellations, particularly the ones that maybe are not destination airports, but places you might be flying through. For example, Chicago Midway, a lot of Southwest Airlines flights to those popular spring break destinations will connect through Chicago Midway. And since they're right up there on the number of delayed and canceled flights, is definitely something that you want to prepare for. So, happening around town and around the area, this is a dream event for Java junkies. It's the Northwest Ohio Coffee Trail. This year to benefit the local chapters of NAMI. Tracy Rath is with us, along with Larissa Herbert. from NAMI, and thanks very much for dropping by.
No problem.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
This is a terrific event. It is grown. Actually did this last year, got a new name, a new mission, and this has grown considerably.
It has. Yeah, so we have 23 coffee shops / coffee trucks is what I keep saying, because three of those are actually coffee trucks this year.
Okay.
So that's a little extra challenge because you have to find where they are.
So it's a bit, you can make it a game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hide and seek.
So how does the coffee trail work? Give us all of the details on this,
so,
first of all.
So people, $30 for a trail card, mm-hmm. and then that trail card gives you some form of free coffee, sometimes just a coffee that you have to add your own stuff to. Okay. Sometimes it's any coffee drink. And then some of the coffee shops, you know, throw in a sweet treat to go with it.
Very nice.
So you get the cards. Probably the easiest way, local coffee shops have signs hanging up that have a QR code where you can scan. All of it's done online.
Okay.
But also we have social media sites, Northwest Ohio Coffee Trail on Facebook and Instagram. Mm-hmm. If you go to either of those, there's links on those too. Or if you're really desperate, Northwest Ohio Coffee Trail. It's like nwohiocoffeetrail at gmail.com. If you really can't find it, email me.
You can always email.
Exactly.
Gmail is everywhere, so you can always
email. Exactly.
And you mentioned nearly 24 or
23.
Yeah, 23. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was going to say nearly two dozen
coffee
shops / coffee trucks are involved. Not going to ask you to name all of them, but as some examples that people might immediately know.
I mean, here locally in Findlay, we have Coffee Amici, We Serve, Baker's Cafe, Fort Findlay, Coffee and Donuts. But then we branch out. We have a couple in Lima. We added one, and there's a coffee shop in Columbus Grove, if you didn't know. Ooh La Latte.
Okay.
And then.
What a great name.
I know. And then Tiffin and Bowling Green, Perrysburg, you know, so it kind of takes a 50-mile radius of Findlay.
Okay.
And you get to explore.
So if it's just in town or you find yourself, you know, in one of these other outlying communities, there's new places to discover
exactly.
and explore.
And we do fun stuff. The trail runs. You can't use your card till April 1st, and it runs from April 1st to June 1st. But
okay.
Then we have weekly drawings for people participating. If you get 17 of the 23 shops complete, mm-hmm. you're in a grand prize drawing. That if you're a coffee person, it is one of the greatest grand prize drawings around, because you get a lot of coffee.
Can we announce what the grand prize is?
I mean, it just includes 6 months of coffee, bags of coffee from certain coffee shops.
Wow.
And gift cards from coffee shops. It's really
awesome.
These coffee shops make this possible because they provide all of what we need to run it. And so we're super grateful for the 23 shops.
Big deal. And the coffee trail cards are on sale now.
They are on sale now, yes. And we're almost at 200 sold, which we're only selling 400. So in like a week and a half, we've sold almost half.
Okay.
So
get them soon.
Exactly.
Even though they don't start working until April 1st, you can get them now. And
We Serve Coffee is really the reason. And I mean, they're hosting it, and so they've been great and have made it possible. So I want to give them a shout out for sure.
Absolutely. So getting your card sooner rather than later is a good idea. As we mentioned, the proceeds benefit the local chapters of NAMI, which would be not just in Findlay, but around these communities as well.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So. What will you use these proceeds for? What do you need?
So, one of the cool things that I think is really interesting about NAMI is that we all operate under like a national umbrella and then a state umbrella. And so each of the local affiliates, they can kind of tailor like their needs to their community, which I think is really, really awesome. For us, I know that like a lot of this money is definitely going to be going to just running our programs. We offer a lot of programs, especially like in the area and stuff. We end up kind of serving outside of Hancock County as well sometimes. And so, I mean, that's going towards running support groups for our like individuals in our community that's providing classes about mental health for both both individuals with mental health conditions as well as their family members, because, you know, I mean, this is like mental health impacts the whole family,
right?
As well as programs for kids that are impacted by mental health, whether it be themselves or their family members. Also goes towards running, providing training for local businesses, and I mean anything that walks through our door, really. Yeah. that
it has to do with the mental health, it comes under the mental health
umbrella. Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting you mention training for local businesses as one aspect of what you do. Just to focus on that for a moment, it kind of struck me, because certainly in recent years we've become more cognizant of mental issues.
Absolutely.
That is a good thing in general, but also with that comes a lot of misinformation.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's honestly a lot of what we do, is kind of providing the facts behind some of that misinformation, because mm-hmm. I mean, in the age of the internet, you know, I mean, there's information is everywhere.
Wait, you're saying that some of the information that I read on the internet might not be 100% accurate?
It is a possibility.
I am shocked.
Yeah, so we try to help kind of do some of that myth busting and provide people with just like the raw, honest facts that are, you know, we'll break them down and spit them out into bite-sized pieces for anyone. So.
It is sort of a delicate balance between removing the stigma and getting people talking about this, but then getting people to talk about the right things in the right way.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And kind of trying to help people be more confident. Like, now that people are more open talking about mental health, like, mm-hmm. great, now we've got it into the open, but now what?
Yeah.
So kind of providing some of those action steps behind, like, okay, yeah, I see that my coworker's struggling or my friend is struggling.
Yeah.
But like, what do I do now?
In addition to the outreach in terms of, you know, myth busting, as you were mentioning, reaching out to those who need help that still haven't contacted the people that can help is a big part.
Yeah. We actually we do outreach in a lot of the local inpatient facilities. So we're in the Steady Path. We're in our Orchard Hall here at Blanchard Valley, and we're meeting people. I mean, right where they're at.
Yeah.
So we're able to kind of provide like a little bit of a kind of cushion, soft place to land as they're transitioning back out of that
now,
environment.
Now, for those who are interested in learning more, either because they have some current concerns for themselves, maybe a family member or family member with mental illness they don't know how to deal with. Again, you talked about you do work with families as well. How do folks reach out to NAMI?
Well, a number of ways. You can give us a call at the office. Our number is... let me get my number right here before I don't want to tell you the wrong info. 567-301-2101. Or you can hop on our website, namihancockcounty.org. Or if you're a person, like face-to-face person, you can absolutely come visit us. We are there 9 to 5 Monday through Friday and 9 to 3 on Fridays at 305 West Hardin Street, the old Campfire building. Okay. So. Yeah.
And again, an event like the Northwest Ohio Coffee Trail, great for raising awareness and obviously raising funds to help continue the mission. Once again, Tracy mentioned where folks can get more information, get their cards, and hop on the trail.
Exactly. So probably the easiest way is to follow us on social media, which is just NW for Northwest Ohio Coffee Trail on Facebook and Instagram. If you stop in local coffee shops, you can get info there too, because they all have a poster that has the basics of the fundraiser and one of those great QR codes that give you all you need.
We also have a link up on our webpage at goodmornings.net if you want to learn more. Again, Tracy Rath, Larissa Herbert, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show by visiting our website. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, U.S. Senate candidate Matt Dolan will join us ahead of his campaign barnstorming tour of Northwest Ohio over the next several days. Plus, the Caitlin Clark effect. Talk about her lasting impact on college basketball and the young girls who dream of following in her footsteps. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.